Hello and welcome to Dialect. I'm Tony Gosling. Dialect's Bristol's first podcast, set up in 2001 with a Millennium Grant from the Scarman Trust. We're on Bristol Community FM 93.2 every Tuesday at noon. That's bcfmradio.com/dialect. This week, to vaccinate or not to vaccinate? We've all heard the stories and seen the TV ads, but Hope Hartley disagrees. She bags mums in Hotwells to persuade them not to vaccinate their children. Why? And John Coward is from Licorice Heaven, a Swindon firm that imports the best Dutch licorice and knows all about the amazing black stuff some love and some hate. Dialect's produced by volunteers. We're online at dialectradio.co.uk and based at the People's Republic of Stokes Croft Arts Centre on Jamaica Street. If you have someone you'd like us to interview or would like to volunteer, have a pen ready at the end of the show.
My name's Hope Hartley and I'm here to speak about vaccines.
Well, what's your own experience as a mum been?
How's my experience as a mother been? Really heartbreaking.
What was the first, you know, encounter you had with vaccines then?
The first encounter I had, my daughter Tilly was 2 days old and they said, can we give her a vitamin K vaccine, a vitamin K jab? And I said, oh, why? And they said, oh, it's just that the baby doesn't make any vitamin K and they really need it and it's just a little hill prick. And I said, oh, okay. You know, I just had a baby and I just trusted and assumed that everybody was out for my good and my daughter's good. There was no other consideration and no thought went into it. The day after in hospital, because we had a long stay in hospital, she was screaming and screaming and her poos went acidic and she started going yellow. And nobody said anything. Nobody really knew why. They kind of said maybe she's getting a bit of jaundice, and that was it. Nothing was said. So I took my baby home, and then the midwife suggests that you have vaccinations, and I think I was a bit late about it. So her first set of vaccinations would have been 6 months, and I didn't notice anything.
So when you say a set of vaccinations, that's all in one, was it? Was it one injection or several injections at the same time?
It was 2 injections. And in those injections, for example, one of them had the flu vaccine in. And I didn't know that. I didn't know that my baby...
So what were you told beforehand then?
Nothing much. They just say they're going to have some vaccinations and like you kind of recognise the MMR. I think you might be given something to sign, but not a vaccine insert with all the possible side effects that can go, all the things that can go wrong.
Because that for a mum is an important decision, isn't it? If you've got a whole bunch of things that might go wrong on one side and this healthy baby on the other side. Mm. I mean, by 6 months, this jaundice had gone, I take it, from this initial jab.
Yeah, she went back to being a really calm, really calm baby.
So how long did it take to get over? Now, we don't know for sure if it was this vitamin injection that caused that. But, yeah. I mean, and the screaming and stuff. So how long did she take to calm down after that initial, you know, after she'd just been born?
It was actually just a night of screaming. But something about it was obviously worrying and her poo burning her was another worry. Her little bum was red and I'd obviously been washing her with cotton wool and water and it didn't make any sense and she was breastfed. She was breastfed exclusively. I was brought up on a council estate and educated by the Sun newspaper. I didn't question anything.
I mean, fish ponds.
Yeah, a little council estate up by Whitfield School. And I didn't question anything and I wasn't really a thinker. I was more of a doer. So it was the third set of injections, and it was her MMR that she had. I think she was about 14 months old because it was Christmas and she was late having them done.
Was that conscious? Were you just, you know, you were trying to put it off and then thought eventually, oh, I better have this done or not?
I didn't think there was anything wrong with them. In fact, really sadly for my daughter, I Googled them after somebody mentioned that they might not be okay. And I Googled are vaccines safe? And I clicked the first link and I read it and that was it.
And it said yes. All reassuring.
Just, you know, I can't be angry with myself for being uneducated. I had a really stressful childhood, really stressful situations ongoing, but nothing that would have affected my daughter's mental health, because I was really conscientious and I was very motherly as well. So, you know, she was constantly breastfeeding. We co-slept. I wasn't using drugs or anything like that. So it was safe to co-sleep with her. I don't know. I think sometimes people just think that babies scream. And the thing that people actually don't seem to grasp is babies don't scream like that, how they scream when they're injured for nothing. And I've watched many stories, testaments of people and their children with vaccine injury. And it's the kind of scream you never forget. It really does something to you. Like, it's like there's something wrong.
Is the baby not screaming for attention?
Well, for help. They're in agony. I think they're in agony. Some of the side effects for, like, the more common vaccinations, like DTaP and MMR, is encephalitis. So, you know, do you know what that is? It's brain swelling. And sometimes you can even see the swelling of the baby's brain. That's what I think happened to Tilly. So she had the MMR at one, and then she got this awful virus. And then, luckily, it was a mother's instinct, if nothing else. And I just knew I had to pick her up off the bed. And I started shaking her, and she was just a bit grey. It's how I could, the best way I can explain, just a bit grey, but not massively alarming. So I don't know why. But I picked her up and I started shaking her, and her eyes were rolling in the back of her head. And I checked her temperature, and I don't recall what her temperature was, but I didn't believe it was that. And I phoned, and actually I told my sister to run to the other chemist and get a more expensive thermometer, which she did, and it was that. And I was already on the, I was on the phone to, I don't know, 101 or whoever it was at the time, and they said get her in a lukewarm bath straight away, and then you bring her up to the hospital. So I did. And they wanted me to get a urine sample.
Okay, so was this just after one of the vaccinations?
Yeah, or? Within 10 days.
Okay, yeah. Okay, this is when she was one, and this is, what, MMR? Or
yeah,
what?
But I still didn't know, because I got my vaccine records a lot later. So we were trying to get a urine sample, because maybe she had a water infection. No mention of vaccines, no questions.
So what happened at the hospital?
Well, we just waited around for quite a long time trying to get a water sample off of a one-year-old. I mean, absolutely ridiculous in the waiting room. I imagine they would have given her cowpole. That actually causes more problems with the vaccination, something to do with the liver. I can send you links about some of this stuff. And I didn't think we got a urine sample, and we were just sent home. And he said, oh, it's a virus, it's just a virus. And, yeah. And that was it. So within a week of that, she started smashing her head violently into the floor. It's called headbanging. And then I had people remarking on why that might have happened, why she might be doing that. And none of it made sense to me. It was like, no, here's my calm, peaceful baby that's... She barely cried. I mean, it was like my auntie used to joke and say, how many times has she cried this year? She barely cried. And I've now got my calm, peaceful baby on the floor, ramming her head into the floor repeatedly. Now, I had quite a few epiphanies. And one of them was, I remember having an ear infection when I was a little girl and slamming my hands on my ear really hard. I didn't pick that up from Tilly headbanging for quite a while. Put the pieces together. It took a long, long time. So, yeah, and she had her first, say, tantrum at a year old. Somebody said, oh, terrible twos has come early. And she was just stiff and screaming for, like, half an hour. Half an hour the first time that happened.
So do you think that she was trying to say that she was in pain or her head was hurting?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. What makes you think that, then?
Because it makes sense. Just makes sense. And her head would have been hurting. She was pumped full of poison.
say, next set of injections? I mean, there's actually quite a few. How many do children get given these days? You know, and I suppose that you're in a situation where you're having to trust those professionals around you, and you have to actually, you know, I suppose, take it on yourself to say, no, I'm not doing that, through some greater knowledge. And that isn't always an easy thing to do.
It's not always an easy thing to come by, especially, I mean, I meet some really educated people that, you know, it's indoctrination, it's got to be, because they look like religious zombies when you bring it up. You know, there's nothing behind the eyes. It's, I don't know whether they're using a whole heap of NLP. I don't know exactly how it goes about, but, I mean, you know, they've been studying the human mind, Tavistock and all of the rest of it for a long time. I think they've got it down, and I think they know what they're doing. And when I speak to somebody with a little baby, it's like handing your baby up to the most psychopathic organisation ever known to man, holding your tiny little baby up to them and saying, do what you like. And that's what we do.
So did you discuss this at the time when Tilly was two with other mums? And do you think, you know, did you pick up things from other mums?
No, I think I had very low self-esteem. And when things were suggested to me by healthcare workers and that kind of thing, like Tilly had a speech delay, I just assumed it was down to me lacking as a mother. So I didn't sing, I didn't talk to her enough. I thought, so I was quite quick to blame myself. Nothing had happened in that little girl's life other than the vaccines. She hadn't witnessed anything horrible. She hadn't seen lots of different people coming in and out. She'd never been separated from me. There was no reason for her.
So at what point in the programme of friendly, kindly vaccines that the NHS persuades you to give your children, at what point did you think that this is enough, I'm not going to do this anymore?
No, it got worse. She had preschool boosters at five. That would have been MMR again. I didn't notice any difference in her that day. But she was wild already. So one bad day melts into another bad day and you're kind of not in your right mind with it all. Yeah, she was fully vaccinated. And
So how many vaccines is that altogether? And I suppose we should be thinking,
I'd have to have my doctor, my piece of paper, roughly? Which I've got. Okay, so you don't realise that there can be six vaccines in one needle, right? So maybe 18 vaccines? More, that's more than that.
Okay, so that's by age, what, five,
age
six?
Five.
Okay, crikey, okay. That's a lot of vaccines.
Yeah.
And especially if they're all administered together. Now, that seems to me to be one of the problems here, is mixing all the vaccines up and injecting them all at once. I mean, we had Gulf War syndrome back in 1989, 1990, with soldiers who were sent out to fight in the first Gulf War, British soldiers, who ended up extremely sick. Some of them died. Others had permanent things like loss of sight, various other problems for the rest of their lives. Mm. And that, although has been put down by a lot of professionals to the multiple vaccines and multiple chemicals that they were given, the Ministry of Defence is extremely reluctant to admit any responsibility. And I imagine the same would probably be true for the pharmaceutical industry. But anyway, so Tilly's 5-6 years old. Has she suffered any ill effects, do you think, from those vaccines at that point when she started to go to school?
Oh, she was excluded from nursery when she was two. She was wild. Sometimes I don't know how she survived, as in she would run and hide. That was one of the things she used to do. Run in any direction. She'd rip my hair, bite my face, my eyes, just violent, really, really violent. Scream, like a high-pitched scream which would completely disorientate you.
When did that start then?
Straight up after the 13, 14-month vaccine. Yeah. I mean, she's September, so she had it at Christmas.
And did you take her to the doctor over these sorts of things? And did you get any kind of response?
No, nothing that made any sense. Just, maybe do a parenting class, you know? But I'd read so many books about parenting before I had Tilly. Obviously not the right book, as in I didn't get a clue about some of the things, but I'd read a lot of books and felt very, very robbed of my baby.
Yeah. Do you think that would have happened without the injections? I mean, it's very difficult for you to prove that it wouldn't, isn't it?
I know now. So you do the research. Once you do the research, people that kind of say things like, oh, Andy Wakefield's a quack, you know where they're getting their research from. They're doing what I did. They're typing in his name on the first page of Google and they're accepting it as a truth. And that's not how the educated research. Now that I have researched, hundreds of thousands of parents are saying, this has happened to my child. Occasionally people make up lies. We know that. It does happen. But a movement's not going to happen based... You can't... It's just not realistic. It's not realistic. So...
Well, no, you've pointed out to me a couple of doctors that have done research into these vaccines, Holly. Dr. Judy Mikovits, mm-hmm. and Dr. Susan Humphreys. Just think, tell us a little bit about what they've said and who they are.
So Dr. Judy Mikovits, the way she was explained to me is she was a rock star scientist. She did some really important work for HIV. She was really respected. And I think she was working at the CDC. Don't quote me on that.
Sorry, who are they?
The Center of Disease and Control in America.
Okay.
And she found something in the vaccines, something about retroviruses. Anyway, I think she was basically saying that vaccines can perhaps cause cancer and highlighted some other things. And she gave them a paper that she'd written. And I know I'm not getting all the details correct, but the long and the short, she gave them a paper that she'd written and they said, get rid of it. And she said, I won't. And they basically threw her into jail and took her license away and put a gagging order on her for something like 5 years. I mean, you can check all of this. You can just type Judy Mikovits into Facebook and she's done some videos. And when I watch her, you just know she's just a thoroughly decent human being. I mean, there's not actually a lot of money in science. It's not like being...
Well, unless you're working for one of the big pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah. Yeah, but they don't get into it. They don't get into it for those reasons.
No. Is my point. What about Susan Humphreys anyway?
Just another lovely doctor that has whistleblown.
Okay, so we'll put up a couple of links to those on the show page. Also, I noticed just in the last couple of weeks, Senator Mark Green, Republican senator, has been saying that vaccines may cause autism. Someone else in the United States bringing this up, and he is told to shut up immediately. You know, this does sound interesting. He's criticised for even saying, suggesting that there may be a link. Now, this, to me, rings alarm bells. Of course, this is the job of journalists and politicians, is to suggest that things might not be as they seem and might not be safe, and that's our part of our job. Mm. Now surely the pharmaceutical industry shouldn't be afraid of people suggesting that something might not be safe, mm-hmm. when we know how powerful they are, mm-hmm. and we know that they have their, I was going to say tentacles, I probably should say contacts within the regulators, people who are actually deciding what's safe and what isn't. Mm-hmm. A lot of them are working for the pharmaceutical industry in the past, or, you know, and also there's another angle to this, and there are all sorts of ingredients that you wouldn't necessarily wish to have injected into your body or your child's body, mercury, aluminium, monkey kidney cells,
formaldehyde,
human fetus cells, formaldehyde, DNA. Glyphosate, maybe, but I mean,
no, seriously.
I mean, this. You see, how many people, when they're about to get a hepatitis B vaccine, because they're going on holiday somewhere, think to sit and ask their doctor or their nurse, okay, can you tell me exactly what's in that?
Or a meningitis vaccine, and one of the side effects is meningitis. I mean, you know, one of the listed side effects from the MMR vaccine is measles, and then they blame anti-vaxxers for measles outbreaks, and it doesn't make any sense. And well, no, it does make sense. It doesn't, like, unless you don't think about it, you know.
Well, just recently in the United States, there's a vaccine called Infanrix Hexa, Infanrix Hexa. And the regulators in the United States have issued a warning about this. Infanrix Hexa and sudden death. A review of the periodic safety update reports submitted to the European Medicines Agency. And this has gone from the US regulators to the European regulators, awaiting some response. This is a six different vaccines in one. This makes MMR look positively tame.
Mm-hmm.
This is diphtheria, tetanus, pertussis. Is that
Is it not cellular pertussis?
Cellular pertussis, yep. Hepatitis B, polio, and flu, all in one. And some people apparently have been, this is a GlaxoSmithKline treatment. Apparently, according to these regulators in the US, they have incidents of quite a lot of people who are having sudden death after getting this vaccine. Now, I don't know what is the point of having a vaccine which one of the side effects is sudden death. So how did you come to sort of really start looking into this and getting yourself a bit educated on this, Holly?
Okay, well, my story is my story, and it's not going to be the same as anybody else's. I was under an incredible amount of stress, and I'd stopped eating. I was juicing, green juices, randomly. It was like a series of events, a conversation with my doctor, where I looked her dead in the eye, and a light bulb went off, and I said, it was that, and I swore, it was that MMR vaccination, wasn't it? And with tears in her eyes, she nodded. And it just kind of spiralled from there. I started looking into everything.
Because a lot of doctors will say, no chance, that there's no link between.
It's not on paper.
I suppose this is just a nod, isn't it?
Yeah. But that was the start. That was the start of it. And, you know, some people say, would you take the red pill or the blue pill? I really wish, even now, I kind of don't, actually, because of the things that I've done.
Well, you've got the blue pill, which is you feel all mollified and happy, but the red pill is the truth.
It's been a painful coming of age.
So what advice have you got for mums now about this, from your experience?
Okay. I would always say read the vaccine insert. Consider who stands to gain.
We see, it's funny, isn't it? But quite often you will have the vaccine and then you will maybe give it a little bit of paper about it afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the wrong way around.
The insert is probably like 20 pages, all folded out, you know, like in a paracetamol. It's the same thing. I would say read the vaccine insert firstly. Maybe look at a site like Veyers, which is where people report adverse reactions. Watch The Truth About Vaccinations or the film Vaxxed or Shots in the Dark. There's many activists, really, really astute activists all over this that have got the numbers, the figures, that, you know, all of it. And what else? And I'd say trust your instincts. I mean, mine were really out. But most mothers get a bad feeling of like, this isn't okay.
Well, what would you say to people that say, well, nobody is setting out to hurt children, help particularly babies, newborn babies? No one's out to hurt them.
I'd say you're incredibly naive. You know, they're dropping bombs on babies all over the place. You know, people make money their god. They really do. And when I speak to people that kind of know, like my doctor, for example, everything, like your whole world as you know it, if you were a doctor, and I believe that doctors get into that career for the right reasons, they want to help people, they're loving children, then they want to be doctors. But then once your eyes are opened and you're actually a working GP, what's the alternative? I mean, I would always go with having a clean conscience myself and being able to sleep at night. But, you know, they've got mortgages, they've got families, what they've invested in, a big fat lie for their whole career. They've damaged hundreds of thousands of babies. I mean, I don't know, maybe I just drink two bottles of wine on the night and carry on. They were thrown around an autism diagnosis, but it's like I say, a vaccine injury is a massive umbrella. So autism is also a massive umbrella, the spectrum, okay? So you could pick anything and say ASD, like a bit compulsive, angry. So my daughter's diagnosis was ADD, attention deficit disorder, ODD, oppositional defiance disorder, the most severe that psychiatrist had ever seen in a child of her age. That's almost, ODD is like the child's equivalent of being a sociopath.
Okay, so the 1980s was when MMR was introduced, this multiple vaccine. I mean, I just don't see why we can't have separate vaccines.
Mm-hmm.
But you as a mum aren't actually able to say, I just want that one of the three, the M or the R.
Mm-hmm.
I want one. You can't say that anymore because those individual vaccines were stopped. And this is when autism started. Do you now talk to other mums more about this sort of thing?
Oh, I stop people every day. Yeah, that's what I do. I decided that the way that it was going to be okay for me, that was done to my daughter, the only way I could live with it was to make sure I told as many people as possible. So I stop people in the street and I ask them if they vaccinate.
So how's Tilly now?
She's struggling. She's suffering. It's not good. You know, she goes to a special school with mostly naughty boys. It's a beautiful school in a lot of ways, but, you know, everywhere's got its problems. She's pretty unhappy on a day-to-day basis. You know, she's got incredible things going on for her as well. You know, she's really musical. She's a great singer. But she gets angry on a level that I don't think most people experience.
Well, some people listening will be thinking, well, aren't you just, you know, because she's had a difficult time, aren't you just sort of scrabbling around for something to blame for this?
No, I wouldn't need anything to blame. I was quite okay with blaming myself. I think a lot of us do that. It's kind of the British way, isn't it? And, you know, I take full responsibility that I took my daughter in to be vaccinated and I didn't do any research. That's on me. It's not on anybody else.
Anywhere you'd like to recommend a sort of websites, or you've already mentioned a few films, but mm-hmm. where's one of the best places to go to get, apart from chatting to you, to get some information about how safe vaccines are?
I just think that you really need to do your own research, like your own due diligence. There's people like Jason Christoph, he's a great activist. There's somebody called Chris Kirchhoff, he's a great activist. I've got Tris Chi Whole Foods, he knows a lot about a lot of different things. Kind of everywhere, just chipping away little by little. Yeah, look at their own statistics. Look at their vaccine inserts, you know.
And I suppose the long and short of it is, before anything's injected into your child, particularly since as a parent, you know, you're their guardian, make sure you read the small print.
Mm.
I mean, the only time you can't really do that, of course, is when you're in an emergency situation in A&E. But the rest, most of the time, it's not like that, is it?
Mm. Absolutely not. Yeah, it's your child and you really need to be aware of how the world works and who's running it. There isn't a more powerful organisation than Big Pharma. We've got opioid epidemics. We've had them testing on groups of babies in prison, for example, babies born into prison. You know, they're having a hard time, and then they're testing vaccines on them. They've tested, they injected a load of black boys with smallpox. I mean, it goes on and on. Crippled a load of children in India with the polio vaccine. The number 48,000 springs to mind. The people that are selling vaccines, what are they gaining? You know, like me coming here, this is on my own time. This isn't fun for me. It's heart-wrenching. You know, if I see a little baby in a pram and I can't speak to that mother, my heart aches every day because this is... How how more important could it be than
so baby? What reaction do you get from mums if you go just up to them and say, "Do you have you vaccinated that child?"
It differs. I mean, I hope that I was gifted with a little bit of charisma, but some days I look wild-eyed and crazy because my daughter and myself, we drive each other crazy. But, you know, a very mixed bag, very mixed bag. I find that when you're a new mum, you're quite girl-like and you're kind of looking for somebody to advise you and be that mother, which is why quite often with the midwives, you're kind of like, oh, the vitamin K vaccination. Yeah, that's fine. So you get some that are just really, really interested, and then you get the others, usually the intellects, weirdly, that look at you stony cold and will put their hand up and not talk to you and just walk. And that's their choice. You know, they don't have to listen. Of course not. But, you know, I don't shout after them or make them feel bad. It's also my choice to go up to them. But it's with the look on people's faces, it's bizarre to me that they can't consider that Big Pharma isn't looking after them, looking out for their child's best interests.
OK, mums, you better watch out if you're wandering around Hot Wheels or pushing your baby in a pram. Holly Hartley might come and get you. Anyway, Holly, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk, your local community radio run by volunteers. Log on to our website at dialectradio.co.uk to find out more.
My name is John Coward. I'm part owner of a company, or little business called Licorice Heaven. And it wasn't me who actually formed it. It was my best friend. We've known each other since we were, school kids, really. In fact, I introduced him to his wife. The joke is, he still speaks to me. Actually, they've been married now for 40-odd years. And Chris, and his wife, was at a meal with some Dutch friends. And after the meal, the Dutch is a sort of a gesture. They give some licorice out. It's just the way they are. And Chris thought, this is lovely stuff. Where can I get it? And the Dutch guy said, well, we have trouble in this country. We get it when we go back to our parents in the Netherlands. So Chris thought, well, I can form a little business here, getting the licorice directly in. And he was working at the time. And he then knew that I was taking early retirement and said, John, would you like to come in with me? Because I've got a financial background. And it went on from there, really. And that was about 14 years ago.
Crikey. And you're based in Swindon.
I'm based in Swindon, yes, but Chris is based he lives in Calne, which is just outside, so he's moved down there. Yeah.
So what do you have, giant vats full of licorice?
No, we import it directly from the Netherlands, about 2.5 ton of it at a time, then we bag it up and we sell it at food festivals and on the internet, and we sell to a few shops, etc.
Now, I'm a little bit offended that possibly Dutch licorice is better than British licorice. Why can't we do this stuff?
Good question. As everyone knows, the major producer of licorice is in a town called Pontefract up in Yorkshire, but I believe they've been taken over by a company called Haribo.
Who is it that's supposed to make those that up north then?
Good question. I think the factory is still over there, owned there, but I think it's sort of economy of size, and Haribo being a multinational company,
didn't it used to be called Barrett's?
No, I think that's another company as well. I'm not sure whether Barrett's is part of it, actually. That's another thing altogether, because Barrett's is more of a sweetie licorice, you know, what I call a sweet, whereas our predominant licorice that we sell is, you know, just pure licorice, really, although we do some what's called English licorice, which is based on, sort of a Barrett's sort of type of licorice.
Hang on a minute, because what you're saying is you're importing English licorice from Holland?
That's right, yeah. Well, the English, the Dutch are quite, the Netherlands, so the Netherlands are the largest producer of licorice in the world. And they're not stupid. They make licorice for other countries as well, so they export it. Like they export a lot to Germany. So they've got a long tradition of making licorice, but they're clever enough to decide to know that obviously that certain countries taste, but the population of certain countries taste like different types of licorice. So they make what they actually call English licorice. although I was speaking to some Dutch people whose English are absolutely fantastic, of course. They all speak brilliant English. And they say they actually eat English licorice made in Holland in the Netherlands. So, yeah.
What about the actual origin? It's a licorice, as far as I know, it looks like a bit like a kind of cauliflower type of plant. I don't know exactly what they're called, but a bit like the is it horse parsley or something?
Yeah, well, it's related. It's a legume, you know, like a pea family, and it is a perennial plant. It's indigenous to sort of southern Europe and places like Turkey.
But I'm sure I've come across a very, very strong licorice smelling type of plant here in the UK.
Yeah, that's
just growing wild.
Yeah, good question. Yeah, what it is there's aniseed and licorice, and they're very much the same, but they're two complete genuses of plants. The licorice plant is, the Latin is Glycyrrhiza, which means sweet root, but the anise plant is part of the fennel genus, so it's completely different. They're completely different plants.
So the licorice flavour actually comes from the root, is that what you're saying?
That's right. So the roots are very, very long, and the reason why licorice is quite expensive is because it costs a lot to harvest. That makes sense.
Well, you have to pull it all up, I suppose, out of the ground.
Actually, yeah.
Like beetroot or something.
That's right. And it likes a very sandy soil. So that's why it was grown in Pontefract, because I believe it's quite sandy soil up there, although the plant itself likes the sun on its back. So it takes a lot longer to grow a plant up in Pontefract.
Now, you're talking about these Pontefract cakes. These very sweet licorice. That's not actually, I mean, I don't know about you, but I find that too sweet, and I would like something a little bit less sweet. I imagine the Dutch have got their heads around that problem a long time ago.
That's right, yeah. So what I think's happened is that if you have a Pontefract cake from many years ago, it wasn't quite as sweet as that. And I think what they've done is they pondered to the British thirst for sweet things. I think the palate of the English people they like sweeter things these days, and I think they changed the recipe. They're not as the same as what they were perhaps 20 years ago.
Well, actually, I mean, they've opened up a market for you, because we're being told all the time that we're having too much sugar, aren't we?
Exactly. Now, the only problem is the Dutch don't like to put artificial sweeteners in their licorice, so it's very, very difficult to get licorice without sugar or glucose in it.
I'd say that's a good thing. A lot of these artificial sweeteners have their own toxicity, which might be worse than the sugar.
Well, that's exactly what my point of view is, that we've been eating sugar since, for years and years and years. And you don't know what these sort of additives are, which, these sugar substitutes are. What's the long-term effect? So I'm with you on that. I think, sugar in moderation is good. Too much sugar obviously means that, it's too much carbohydrates and, you put on a bit of weight. But I think a bit of sugar, you need sugar for energy, you see.
Okay, so can you run us through the basic ones? You have unsweetened licorice, and I know one of the things the Dutch are into is this salt licorice, which I find are absolutely disgusting, but they love it.
Yeah.
I'm sure some people do.
Yeah, exactly. Now, the problem we get is when people look at the Dutch licorice, they automatically think it's going to be salty. And the problem is the salt that they use, the salt you put on your fish and chips is sodium chloride. I think it's NaCl, the chemical symbol. But the licorice, salty licorice, they use ammonium chloride, so it's got a bitter taste. And a lot of people don't like it. So I get a lot of problems when I'm, suggesting to one of my customers, would you like some Dutch licorice? They sort of turn a funny nose up at me and say, oh, it's salty. And I say, well, no, we do a sweet Dutch licorice. In fact, we sell probably 90% of our licorice sales are sweet licorice. We only sell about 10%, mostly on the internet for the aficionados of licorice eating, the salty ones.
I suppose, I think you could do self-harming, actually, by eating that stuff. I mean, it's not, for me personally, it's really unpalatable. It's not like, say, popcorn, you know? You can have sweet popcorn or salty popcorn, you know, the much of a muchness. But I really, I find it a bit difficult to eat that stuff anyway.
I'm going to come clean with here. The real salty stuff, I don't like very much. But we do it like sort of salty caramels, which are very, very popular, the salty caramels.
What about really super rock-hard licorice?
Yeah, well, the Dutch, you know, pander for all tastes. So we, you know, we sell soft licorice, hard licorice, and the Dutch, whatever the shape of the piece of licorice is almost like a hallmark. So it doesn't matter which company makes the licorice. If it's in the shape of, say, a little cat or a little kitten, it'd be very, very hard licorice. And that licorice is exported a lot to Germany. The Germans like this hard licorice. It's quite strong. Whereas if you want something a little bit softer, you would go for something like a Kokkincha, which is one of our bigger sellers. And then we've got the really soft licorice, some of which is... it's almost like a jelly. It's Zouder Zee. A Dutch lady told me the other day they call that old lady's licorice, for it's good for people with no teeth. But I think she was having a laugh at me on that one.
is it good for you, licorice?
Good question. It all depends what you want it for. Another little anecdote I tell my customers when they're talking about licorice. We do a licorice called Coin, very hard and not very sweet. And I was doing a food festival a couple of years ago, and a guy came up to me and he said, "Well, can I have 15 bags of your coins?" And I said, "Well, of course, yeah. But as you probably know, licorice is a laxative if you eat too much, especially on an empty tummy." So I said to this guy, and I said, "Well, yeah, I'm sure I'm more than happy to sell you 15 bags." And I said, "I'll tell you what, I'll give you a small deal on that because, you know, for economy of size, etc." I said, "But whatever you do, don't eat all that." I said, this Dutch licorice is a lot stronger than the licorice you're used to. So, you know, what happens if you eat too much licorice?" And he said, "Don't worry." He said, I'm a doctor. He said, "I'm going to put this in my surgery." He said, "We get a lot of my patients coming in with mouth ulcers, etc. And in the past, I've been giving them, antibiotics, but too much antibiotics, and you get a resistance. And this licorice is is almost as good." So he said, "I'm going to suggest these patients chew this licorice to get rid of their mouth ulcers and infections on their palate." So yeah.
I'm sure it's got some trace elements, that sort of thing, in it too.
I mean, there's a lot of history. We just don't know what's in the future. I did read in some journal that the University of Minnesota, I think it was, thinks that there may be some cures for some cancers with it. But, you know, this is early doors. You know, we don't know what's in the future. But there's a lot of things that we don't know about with the natural.
Now, look,
natural
we obviously think of licorice as being black. Is it really all black? Is it originally black when you did it out of the ground?
Very good question. Yeah, a very good question. The blackness is burnt molasses, which gives it blackness. And we actually sell licorice. Some of our licorice has got a brown colour. It's not jet black. And a lot of my customers say, "Well, that's not right." And I said, "Well, it is." I said, "That one hasn't got so much burnt molasses. And the Dutch won't put an artificial colouring in the licorice." Now, I don't know if you remember when you were younger, you would smear the licorice over your teeth and they'd all go black. Well, that isn't anything to do with the licorice. That is that's colouring to make the licorice blacker, because people perceive that they want their licorice black.
So the natural colour of it is a sort
I think it's colourless, it's the extract. You see, the licorice is very, very strong. It's a bit like menthol. You don't need very much to get the flavour. And that's infused with other products to make the licorice sweet. So they might use wheat. We've got one which they use a potato starch, because, as you probably know, a lot of people are allergic to wheat products. It's gluten intolerance. So we've actually got a licorice which has got no wheat in. But most licorices have got wheat and, of course, sugar.
Now, John, I know you came into the business, Licorice Heaven, as a financial person.
Well, that's right. That's where my background is, you see. I'm a money man, I hate to say. And what we try to do is we try and keep our costs down, because then we can pass that on to the customers, which makes our product competitive, in which case we sell more. The chap from Tesco, his motto was stack 'em high, sell 'em cheap. And that's what we try and do. So
what I'm going to say now, don't you? You said, I'm sorry, that's the industry I was from. You know what? Bankers are not the most popular people on the planet.
I know. That's why I was very, very cautious to say that.
Well, what went wrong? I mean, I know, you're someone who's worked in the industry. Nowadays,
right.
if you, no one almost dares to confess to have been working in banking nowadays.
I'm going to be very, very controversial here. I worked in for the bank with the black horse. And when I started banking many, many years ago, you worked your way up from the shop floor to the top dog, and you knew the intricacies. And one of my old bosses said, "We're the only company that once sometimes got to ask for its stock back, because we lend money and we need to get it back." And what I think happened in the just before the boom time, is that they were bringing in people perhaps who didn't have a banking upbringing,
about the Big Bang, the 1980s, or
exactly
that?
So Big Bang came in, and a lot of people thought there's a lot of money to be made. Now, we're not talking about the merchant banks, we're talking more, you know, the mortgage market, etc. And the people at the top were coming in from other industries, and they didn't grasp the nettle that selling banking products is different than selling, dare I say it, holidays or whatever, because at the end of the day, you've got to lend to someone who can pay you back. And all they wanted to do, and again, this is very controversial, is they were lending on either an asset like a house, not really realizing that the value of the house could go down, because they think they could always sell the house. And of course, that permit, you know, in America with the two big companies over there, they were
this is Lehman Brothers, I think, is it?
No, this was what they used to call them, Fannie Mae, wasn't it?
Oh, yes.
This is going back quite a few times, and then people then suddenly said, well, this we're lending to people who can't repay, but the asset that we were going to sell to get our money back isn't there. And of course then the market crashed, and banks have been lending to other banks on the strength of their asset book on these properties. And then suddenly everyone thought, well, this company is lent to people it shouldn't have done with assets which aren't that strong. And that was what clogged it up. And the banking was based on trust, and it went spiraling down. I can remember back in the old days is that we would always, when I was lending money, my first thing is, can this person pay, and will he pay? Not, I'm going to get, you know, on the asset. I was lending to the person if he could pay back. And a lot of my customers, when I said, well, look, unfortunately, you can't buy this five-bedroom detached house, you know, you're going to have to sell for a four-bedroom. They wanted the five-bedroom. They borrowed too much through another company, one of these secondary lenders. And, of course, it all went pear-shaped. But we've gone off the state of licorice here.
We have. I mean, this is fascinating, though, because I think, you know, there's definitely big changes gone on in banking, and one wishes almost that we could get some of the old bankers back.
Yeah, I mean, the best bosses I had were guys and women who started on the what I'd call the shop floor, you know, on the cashiers, etc. And they knew, and they had to get banking exams. So I had to get 10 3-hour banking exams. So I've got 10 exams each of 3 hours to be, so say, competent in lending. Well, that's all gone out the window.
Now, Gordon Brown said back in 2008, I think it was a slip, I'm not sure if he meant to say it, but he said, I saved the world. Actually, what's happened is we've now got an even bigger bubble. We've got money printing going on. We've got massively overvalued share prices and overvalued property prices, and yet this banks are still lending. It does make it sound as if history could repeat itself. I wonder what you think.
Well, that's, one doesn't know what's in the future. I mean, all I would say is if you actually look on what's called salary multiples, how much people are lent, I think the actual salary multiples compared to what people were earning is about the same as they were in the 70s, which is when people are earning sort of £1,800 a year. If you multiply that up, that will be the size of the mortgage. So if you, I don't know what the average wage is now, but if you, you know, if we were lending four times somebody's salary, that's what they were doing in the 70s. It's just with inflation, we're talking on bigger numbers.
Also, there's this whole thing called casino banking, which is the merchant banks. They're supposed to be separate to the high street banks, but are they?
Yeah. Well, merchant banking is, that's the ones that have got a bad reputation because, you know, all this hedge funds and all that, they can manipulate the markets. We don't want to go too far there. And, the big merchant banks, that is where they make big money by, they can manipulate the markets.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you a final question. Mark Carney has decided to quit. They've given you the job, someone who's an old hand. Is there anything that you would say? Say you were sitting in the Governor of the Bank of England's position and saying, you know, okay, John, what do we do?
Well, first of all, I'd make sure that we firm up the Financial Services Act. So people have got to be registered, fully registered, inspected regularly. It is coming so that you get rid of these cowboy lenders. I would definitely agree with splitting merchant banks with ordinary retail banks. That is the thing. And I would put the directors legally responsible. I know on paper they are, but anybody caught doing something wrong, personally, they go to jail. That's the first things I would do.
And how do you rate the governors, Mark Carney and Mervyn King?
I like Mervyn King, Lord King. I think he was very good. Mark Carney, he's done a few. If they've got a difficult job, let's not make any bones of it. But I think he overacted when we voted to come out of the EU by reducing interest rates. And I think he has admitted that it was a wrong thing. He sent out the wrong signals. I'm not an expert, but I do think he tends to overreact. And the problem with what he says can affect the markets. And you've got to be very careful what you say. Because,
well, surely in that case, the Bank of England governor shouldn't say anything.
Well, that is a good question. There's something to be said for there, but then he's got his actions, isn't he? That sends signals to the markets. And the markets, a lot of these are very volatile because there are speculators involved to make a quick few pounds.
Yeah, or a few million.
Well,
Right. John, can you just give us your website again?
Yeah, it's www.licorice7.com, and we're also .co.uk. So if anybody wants to have a look at our products,
where can we actually find you in the flesh on the ground?
Well, what we do is we're on Facebook, and what we tend to do is that if you follow us on Facebook, we put down where we are. We tend to, you know, do shows, etc. And we usually say to our, you know, people, you know, we are at this weekend. I'm at Marlborough College, doing a Christmas thing there, and that's a good one because that's in aid of cancer research. So that one's quite close to my heart. So the pitch fees are a little bit higher, but quite frankly, I don't mind paying that because it's all going for a good cause.
John Coward from Licorice Heaven, thanks very much for joining us.
Okay, thank you so much.
Well, that's all for this week. Dialects Bristol's first weekly MP3 podcast. You can download it to listen on your phone or in the car. Subscribe to our email list and listen the week before broadcast, if you like, at dialectradio.co.uk. Thanks to our guests, Hope Hartley and John Coward, and also to studio engineers Dave Bazanko and Josh Chivers. Dialects of Bristol Broadband Co-op production. Catch us on Bristol Community FM 93.2 every Tuesday at noon, and anyone can contribute. Contact us through the People's Republic of Stokes Croft, just off Jamaica Street, on 0117 909 6897. They're online at prsc.org.uk. If you've got some precious spare time, you can volunteer with us or for hundreds of opportunities elsewhere in Britain via the National Volunteering website, do-it.org. Thanks for listening to Dialect. And I'm Tony Gosling, wishing you a very good week. I'll be back on Friday with my two-hour BCFM politics show, live from 6 till 8 p.m. Meanwhile, till next Tuesday, midday, from the Dialect crew, goodbye for now.
Black coffee, I see double. Ooh, ooh, ooh. How am I gonna get home? Black coffee, I'm so dizzy. Black coffee, please get busy. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Help me so I can get home. Had a little too much hoopy soup. All I meant to take was one. Now my head is going loopy loop. Some stuffy kid, what fun, oh. Black coffee, help a fella. Black coffee, what'll I tell her? Ooh, 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 I'm afraid to go home. Thank you.